Hello, podcast listeners. This is your host Ryan Van Wyk back with another podcast episode. This is episode 54. Who knew that the podcast would be going a little bit okay? I just got off a 7-hour shift at Meijer working 11 to 6. Even though it's Easter, so happy Easter to everybody. I can care less so if you celebrate it or not, but I know that people will be celebrating. But I did 11 to 6 shift. Meijer had the signs up on the door stating that we closed at 5, and we still had fucking idiots, like the customers, trying to come in and trying to shop the store with, like, right when we were getting ready to close. And we had people, even after 5 o'clock, come up to the parking lot and try to walk in. And I'm like, we're closed. We closed at 5 o'clock. You're not going to get in. But anyway, but these people do this shit all the damn time. Even our pharmacy side door closes at 9. And they will still try to get in that way. Even though we have signs on the door stating that we're closed on that side. And we have people try to get in all the fucking time. The Cubs won back-to-back games. That's good for them. Let's see if they can keep it up. Let's try to get a few more wins in there. And I think the Bulls play tonight. It's kind of sad that they acquired Nikola. It's a good thing that they acquired Nikola Vucevic. The only bad thing is that they have yet to win a game since they acquired him. And we do have sad news in the world of acting. Gloria Henry, who was best known for her role on as the mother on the Dennis the Menace TV show, just died. She was 98. That's a pretty good long life. I didn't realize that the show was on the air for 4 years. I thought it was on there longer. But the show ran from 59 to 63. And then we also had that guy from the band War Die, Morris, I think it was Morris Dickerson was his name. The guy was 71. I said, but even though 71 is pretty good long life too, but I said, but not as old as 98 or something ago. Let's see, for the Cubs yesterday, to get back to that, Jake Arrieta won the game for the Cubs yesterday, and Zach Davies won the game for the Cubs today. And Craig Kimbrell got the win, the save today. Yesterday it wasn't a save situation, because yesterday the Cubs won like 5-1, so that wasn't going to be a save situation anyway. Let's see, there's nothing on that one. Yeah. Okay, I went too far here. Let's see how this goes, but let's see. Even though Biden's trying to aim big, Biden is looking to restore our faith in the government. Even though I don't believe anything the government tells me because they're full of shit. But as President Joe Biden preaches patience but acts with urgency, his vision of the powers of the Oval Office is quickly taking shape, but it's modeled after Democratic predecessors who dramatically expanded the reach of government to confront the generational crises. In a recent meeting with historians and in private conversations with advisors, Biden has looked to the examples that were set by Presidents Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson as he aims to use the levers of executive authority to create the opportunities and break down barriers. But unlike Roosevelt and Johnson, who enjoyed formidable Democratic majorities in Congress, Biden has had to operate with the no margin for error edge in the fiercely partisan Washington. Born soon after Roosevelt's New Deal and having first run for office in the shadow of Johnson's Great Society, Biden has long believed in government as an instrument for good, and now with the COVID-19 public health pandemic and the economic carnage it wrought, that philosophy is being put to a fundamental test, and Biden's place in history is in the balance. He has chosen what they call momentous action over incremental, willing to cast aside visions of a bipartisan Washington in favor of a tangible of results that Biden insists are resonating with Republican voters, if not their elected officials. President Biden was clear about the crisis of democracy, and he's aware of the factors and forces that may try to undermine the American experiment if we are not careful to protect it. That's what the historian Michael Eric Dyson has said. There was no question that the president was concerned about how we treat our fellow citizens, and is keenly aware that the moral trajectory of the United States has made a difference in both domestic and foreign policy. Over his first 2 months in office, Biden has signed into law a $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, and this past week he proposed an even larger $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan and tax plan that is the first installment of a two-part legislative package that's meant to reshape the American economy. His team's guiding principle is that the United States must push past the pandemic, and the January 6th insurrection is at the Capitol to rebuild the economy is in an equitable way that shows the nation can still make good for its citizens as it faces a threat from the autocratic states, including China, for global economic supremacy. But there's a lot of autocrats in the world who think that the reason why they're going to win is democracies can't reach consensus lo any longer. Autocracies do. Biden said Wednesday when he announced his infrastructure plan in Pittsburgh. And that's what competition between America and China and the rest of the world is all about. It's a basic question: can democracy still deliver for their people, and can they get a majority? Biden continued, "I believe we can, and I believe that we must." The president has urged action despite a very narrow Democratic majority in the House and a 50-50 split in the Senate that requires the Vice President Kamala Harris to break ties, and no Republican lawmakers voted for the COVID-19 relief bill, although it was popular among voters of both parties. But no Republican appears likely to support the infrastructure plan anyway. To this point, the White House has refused to entertain the debate that often bedevils the president to know their party traditionally lose seats in their first midterm elections, but play it safe to try to preserve power or go big. Biden's bet for the latter is clear, banking that voters will ignore the big price tags and reward tangible results on vaccines, roads, broadband, and more, while forcing the Republicans to defend a tax infrastructure that benefits the ultra-wealthy companies. But even so, the progressive forces in the Democratic Party that helped elect Biden are already pushing that the president to go bigger, and still demanding immediate action on gun control, immigration, and climate change. Biden is asking for patience, keenly aware of the arithmetic of the Senate and the headwinds he'll face on some issues. Biden, being 78 years old, he's also been pressed for urgency, knowing that his party's hold on Congress is tenuous, and believing that now was the moment to restore a weary public's faith in the government. This past week, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had framed Biden's gamble as in the tradition of America to think big. Biden has indeed looked to history for guidance. A month ago, he gathered more than a half dozen historians in the East Room of the White House and listened to each speak about what made previous presidents successful and what lessons could be drawn from the present. For 2 hours, Biden asked had asked questions, attendees said, and reflected his own political role models. This is a president who obviously loves history, and he has used used history all of his life in his career, said the presidential historian Michael Beschloss. He knows all about 1930s re and 1965, and we have seen evidence of that his whole career. Biden's infrastructure package would go well beyond the usual commitments to roads and bridges to touch almost every part of the country. It's a down payment on combating the climate change and a chance to take on racial inequities and the expansion of broadband and investment in manufacturing and a reorienting of the corporate taxes to pay for everything. But you get the gist of that. I'm not going to read the whole damn thing. Damn. Oh yeah, my brother would love this. A Tom Brady rookie football card has sold for 2.2 for has sold for $2.25 million in an auction. Fuck me. Coming out of New York, a quarterback, Tom Brady has proven that he's the greatest of all time, and not just on the football field, but also even in the collectible market. A rookie football card of Tom Brady had just sold for $2.25 million. The card was signed. The card was signed by the GOAT, which is a common reference to Brady, and it stands for the greatest of all time. The price fetched Friday night through an online sports auction house called Leland's, and it broke a football card record that was previously held by Brady. Another of Brady's rookie cards sold for $1.32 million on PWCC Marketplace last month, but Tom Brady continues to shatter records, both on and off the field. And the Leland's president, Michael Heffner, said in a statement, Brady began his professional football career with the New England Patriots, where he won 6 Super Bowls. He continued his winning ways at departing from the Patriots in 2020, and he joined the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He earned a 7th Super Bowl win when the Buccaneers beat the Kansas City Chiefs this year. Yep. And yeah, and for movies, I've been watching movies all day. I did watch a movie earlier today on Vudu called Outlawed, and it's about a guy who was in the Royal Navy, and then he gets kicked out due to a mission that was failed. And then eventually his girlfriend gets kidnapped, and then he has to go on the mission to rescue her. That was not a bad movie. And then I also watched the first 6 Wrong Turn movies. I just started the 7th one yesterday. I still gotta finish watching it. But Wrong Turn, but the movie Wrong Turn is fucked up in itself because it's about cannibals. So yeah, it's a fucked up movie. And then I was working out in 70 something fucking degree weather today. I mean, it was so fucking hot. I'm like, damn. I was drinking water. I was drinking whatever I can. I'm like, I was fucking sweating like a son of a bitch. And then what sucks is that I gotta go back to work tomorrow in fucking hot degree and hot weather again, because I work tomorrow 8 to 4, 4:30 or something like that. What's we got here? Oh, that's a surprise. The Bulls won today. 115 to 107. Let's see, the Bulls, let's see, the Bulls, won 115 to 107, but it looks like they had only two players scored 25 point, I mean 20 points or more, but they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people score 10 points or more. Let's see, Trae Young, I mean, I'm sorry, Thaddeus Young. Thaddeus Young scored 12 points, Patrick Williams scored 11, Nikola Vucevic scored 22. This is the first win, basically, the Bulls have had since acquiring him. let's see. Tomas Satoransky scored 19. Zach LaVine scored 25. Lauri Markkanen, who's now on the bench, scored 8 points. Troy Brown Jr. scored 6. Daniel Tice scored 10. Arthur Diakono, second game already, where he scored no points. And Denzel Valentine scored 2. And then the Clippers beat the Lakers 104 to 86, which makes me happy. Even though that arrogant prick LeBron's been out for the last several couple weeks, which is a good thing. So as long as he's out, the Lakers can keep on losing. And then the Cardinals got their ass beat by the Cincinnati Reds 12-1. Every time the Cardinals lose, that's a good day for me. Oh, man. wrong one. Looks like the Yankees lost today 3-1. Damn, that sucks. Let's see, let's see, the Toronto Blue Jays got their runs off of home runs. Grichuk with the 2-run homer, and Guerrero Jr. and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with the solo homer. Looks like Borucki got the win, and Merriweather got the save. That's for Toronto Blue Jays. German got the loss. The only run that that the New York Yankees got was an RBI grounder by was an RBI single by Gardner. Then we got the Twins beating the Brewers 8-2. And that one, let's see who won that game. Michael Pineda got that win for the Twins, and Hauser got the loss for Milwaukee. Sorry, my throat's been kind of dry, but I'm had to get something to drink on that one. And then they got two home runs in the game by Minnesota Twins. You had Miguel Sano with his first home run of the year with a two-run shot. And then you had Garber with his first, was a solo. But altogether, the RBIs were driven in by Cruz, Sano, Simmons, Kepler, and Garber. Kepler picked up three RBIs, but he's got four on the year. Garber with his first RBI, Simmons with his first, Sano with two, and Cruz with his first. Also, Kepler stole a base. That's his first of the year. Pineda struck out five for his first win of the year. And then you had Stoschek with two, Robles with two, and Alcala with one. The only home run that that Milwaukee Brewers got in the game was by Jackie Bradley Jr., which is first of the year. And the other RBI was by a guy named by the backup catcher Pena. Or Pina, someone gets Pina. Hauser struck out four for a loss. Rasmussen struck out one. Lindblom struck out none, and Yardley struck out two. Then you got the Houston Astros beating the shit out of Oakland. Oakland is not doing too good by looking at this. They're already 0-4 in the year. Not very good. For home runs for Houston, you got Castro with his first of the year. That's Jason Castro. I think, let me see. Yeah, Jason Castro with his first home run of the year. Then you had Kyle Tucker with his first home run of the year. And then you got Chaz McCormick with his first. His was a three-run homer, and then Tucker with a solo shot, and then Castro with a two-run homer. Castro's got two RBIs in the year, first and second. Tucker with his seventh RBI. Yuli Gurriel got two RBIs, his second and third. Straw with his first. And McCormick with three, his second, third, and fourth of the year. Urquidy got struck out five, but because he didn't go the qualified five innings, he did not get the win. But Belak, who was one of the pitchers in relief, got the win for the Astros by striking out four. The only RBIs did basically but when it comes to let's see the Oakland Athletics got an RBI got an RBI off of an RBI double by Lowry with his first of the year and Olson with his first RBI. Manaea struck out four, Colerac none, Petit none. Wendell Kent struck out one, and then another pitcher named Tom didn't strike out anybody. You got the Orioles pounding on the Red Sox. Had pounded the Red Sox 11-3. Let's see, how long, who was that? Was it? Oh, Bruce Zimmerman got the win for Baltimore. RBIs in the game by Baltimore. Galbis with his first, Franco at two, third and fourth. Mancini with two, Mountcastle with his third RBI, Santander with two, and then Hayes with two. But Zimmerman struck out five, Solskjaer struck out three, but Wells didn't strike out anybody. For Boston, JD Martinez hit his first home run of the year. He got two RBIs in the game, a solo homer and then an RBI double. And then Hernandez got his first RBI of the year. Richard struck out two, but he got the loss because he didn't go didn't go 5 innings to even qualify for the win. Jay Taylor struck out two. Whitlock struck out five. Salamiro struck out two. Barnes struck out two, and then Ottavino struck out two. Indians beat the Tigers 9-3. In that one, Savale got the win, and Norris got the loss. In this one, Hedges got his first home run of the year, and also with Reyes with his first. And then he also got Luplow with his first. Rosario got two RBIs, Hedges with his first RBI, Reyes with his two RBIs, Chang with two, and then Luplow with two. And then Ramirez got his first stolen base of the season from them. And it says Savale struck out six, Quantrill struck out two, and Kleiss struck out one. And this one, all RBIs came off of homers. Mazzara with his two-run shot, and then Baddoo with his first. And Scooble struck out four, Norris struck out one, Farmer didn't strike out anybody, and T. Alexander struck out one. And then the Mets and Nationals game was postponed due to weather. And the Cardinals game, the only RBI that the Cardinals got was by Yadier Molina with an RBI single. It was only his second RBI of the season. Martinez took that loss. He struck out four. Then he had Helsey, didn't strike out anybody. Webb didn't strike out anybody. Cabrera struck out one, and Miller didn't strike out anybody. And this one, Castellanos hit a second home run of the year with a 3-run shot, and Naquin hit his first home run of the year which was also a 3-run shot. Jake Halpin got the win, struck out six, Antone struck out one, and Fulmer struck out two, and Romano didn't strike out anybody. The Rangers beat the Kansas City Royals 7-3. Let's see. In this one, Kiner Falefa, I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. He hit his first home run of the year as a solo shot, and then you had then you had Nate Lowell hit a home run first of the year, 3-run shot, and he's leading right now in the RBIs with 9 on the year. And then he had Holt steal his first base of the season, and Heim steal his first. Jordan Lyle struck out eight, Benjamin struck out three, and Ian Kennedy struck out three. Salvador Perez had hit him a 2-run homer for the Royals. It was his first of the season, but he had two RBIs in the game, second and third, and Alberto with the other one. Isbell stole his first base of the season. Singer struck out five, but he got the loss. Brent struck out one. Junis one. K. Zimmer struck out two, and Wade Davis didn't strike out anybody. Dodgers beat the Rockies 4-2. In this one, Urias got the win, and Gomber got the loss, and Knebel got the save. In the Dodgers game, Smith got his first home run of the year. It was a solo shot. It was his third of a year. Taylor got his second RBI, and Lux got his third RBI. Urias struck out 6, Nelson struck out 3, Knievel struck out 1, and got the save, like I said. And now we go over to Colorado and see what the hell they did here. Okay, Hampson, the only two runs that Colorado got was two runners that were on base when Hampson had doubled, and Hampson got his second and third save of the year. Gomber struck out 2, Gonzalez 2, Estevez struck out 2, Stevenson struck out 1, and Gibbons struck out 1. And then the Diamondbacks beat the Padres 3-1. Wittener got the win, Paddock got the loss, and Davinsky got the save. In this game, it was Peralta with 2 RBIs, first and second. And Widner struck out 5, Crichton struck out 1, Young none, Soria none, Ginkle with 1, and Davinsky with none. The only run that the Dodgers got was a solo homer by Tatis, which is first of the year. And then Tommy Pham stole his first base of the year. It's kind of good to see Tommy Pham actually playing well after the incident that happened a year ago with the stabbing. Now that will be all the games for today because the Mets and Nationals game was postponed due to bad weather. Yeah. So at least the Cubs won back-to-back games, and I think their next game will be, let's see here. I think they might be off tomorrow, but I can't really watch the games. Okay, they play the Brewers tomorrow. Of course, I'll be off of work, but because I cut my cable off, I won't be able to watch them. I would just have to listen into my phone. I don't have a radio to really listen to, but I think the Cubs, yeah, they play the Brewers tomorrow, and then this game will be Trevor Williams against Brett Anderson. No, I'm still awake. I think they're trying to figure out if I'm asleep or not, but I'm still awake. I do gotta work tomorrow in the morning, 8 to 4:30. That's not my choice, but you know how it is. One of our car guys is on vacation, so I got his shifts this week. But I'll let you guys enjoy, and hopefully you guys have fun. For Easter, just don't do anything stupid.